You're listening to the Master Coach Collection. Welcome, Carly Anderson, to the Master Coach Collection.
Thank you. Thank you, Gideon.
Gonna address our listeners before I turn my attention fully to you. And what I want to say is that the Master Coach Collection is a series of conversations between master certified coaches. I'd like to show who we are to the world and give you the opportunity to feel at home with us, to keep good company with us. I am often encouraged by my son, who is six now. He says, "Papa, you're a master certified coach." And he's really proud of me. And that pride in my eyes feels a little hollow because it's like, I want you to know what this thing is that you're proud of. I'll let him be proud. I don't want to take that away from him. But I also want to inform that pride by sharing who we are. And I've been learning who we are by conducting these conversations, and I'm really, really, really enjoying it. So dig into this conversation with Carly and me, and feel like you're there. The stuff that we grapple with, I invite you to grapple with. See what excites your imagination, and think about who else needs to hear this conversation, because I'd like it to be enriching for you and for people that you know would be enriched by this. Carly, it's excellent to have you here.
Thank you.
I was thinking that I've been podcasting for a while, and I have another podcast called Where Genius Grows. The conversation that you and I did there to celebrate my becoming a master certified coach about half a year ago is the last one I published. And I started paying attention to my experience of stalling. And I'm reminded of something that your husband, Michael Stratford, told me when I first spoke to him. It's like, he can tell that he's ready for something because he's doing it. And I had the experience of really only wanting to talk to MCCs for a while, just because they were entering my field of vision. But it didn't seem like Where Genius Grows was the appropriate forum for what I had in mind. And I still have some Where Genius Grows stuff in the can that I haven't published yet. Big surprise with Master Certified Coach guests. But I realized I need to come up with a new focused inquiry for Master Certified Coaches. And that's where we all find ourselves here. And I want to say that you were the mentor who helped sharpen my coaching, brought me up to a level to submit an application to become a master certified coach in a world that has about 1,350 as of whatever I heard last. Beginning of 2021, you have brought a full 88 of those across the finish line. Kudos.
So far.
As of March, what is this, the 12th, 2021, you have brought 88 across the finish line with many, many more in the wings. And if you're listening to this and are considering pursuing a master certified coach credential, even before you get to Carly, where her presence will endorse itself, consider this my endorsement of Carly. Carly, when you were growing up, who was the first person who truly heard and saw you?
So I had an answer when you asked me that question, because it's a great question. You asked me that when you, that podcast, and I want to consider whether that person is still the one I want to mention again. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to change my answer. So this time it's my dad. My dad was a man of action. And I saw that he got a lot of things done. And even as a child, there was just this sense of capability and competence in action. And I know for a long time I modeled that behavior. That's what I have to say.
How did him being a man of action leave you fully seen and heard?
And I guess this is in hindsight because I wouldn't have known this at the time, but we had such clear boundaries as children about everything. And so it felt like a safe container had been created in many ways. For instance, we got up at certain times. We had breakfast at the same time every day. We had dinner precisely at the same time every day, 6 p.m. We went to bed by 8 p.m. We watched certain things on Sundays. Believe it or not, wrestling was one of my father's favorite things. The wide world of wrestling, even back then, from I was in Australia. I'm Australian, live in the United States since 19, well, no, 2001. But yeah, and we would watch football. And I think my passion for sport happened very early on because we were made to watch the same things that he wanted to watch. It wasn't even my mother's choice, actually. So, but there was a lot of safety and boundaries, and I realized how much my eating habits are very good still at this age in my life, which is a lot older. And I eat well. I've always eaten healthy. I didn't have anything other than homegrown vegetables, basically, except potatoes and a few things until I was basically out of home at 19 and
Oh,
on my own.
wow.
So I had an organic, I ate bunches of cheese and it never affected me. I drank cow's milk that was fresh cow's milk. I mean, I had all these great habits that got formed very early in my life. And he was really the driver of that.
When I asked you the question in the fall, it was a something I came up with because, one of the things you do well is see and hear other people, but also help coaches to do that exquisitely. I hadn't really given much thought to what it means to be fully heard and seen. And as this Master Coach Collection inquiry expands, that's coming into view. And in talking to Eddie McDonald, my mind was blown because watching VHS tapes of Fred Rogers as a child left him feeling seen and heard. In talking to Jan Rybeck, who is helping train AI for a vertical development assessment, the algorithm that she and her colleagues are working on is very much helping people feel seen and heard. Two very different examples of no physical seeing or hearing happening, but people feeling seen and heard. Interesting. I recently spoke to Vernice Jones, who talked about a neighbor she had growing up who sang to her. And, the joy in the singing left Vernice feeling seen and heard. So music. And here I'm keenly aware of structure. Structure built around you, provided for you, something constant, something reliable. is the thing that leaves you feeling seen and heard, and perhaps only in hindsight.
Yeah, and I wouldn't say completely seen and heard, but I felt there's a nuance there that I hadn't been, just because your question was asked, which is a really great question, Gideon. My father both was my salt in my wound and my opportunity to turn salt into beautiful water that is very healing, because salty water to me is really healing. I love being in salty water called the ocean, for example. Salt water is a very healing thing. But I also felt as I got older, like until 14, I was the perfect child. I was self-contained, more on the introverted side. I was kind, I was caring, I was studious, I was not, nobody ever put me in a timeout in my life as a child. I had love, I was the first grandchild born on either side of the family, and I was also the first granddaughter born on my dad's side of the family in 75 years, so I felt the love and in a lot from an early age. I also felt overseen and heard by some of my family members because of that. And that's a weird thing. As a maybe a 10-year-old, I really recall a particular time when my grandparents came to visit on a Sunday, as they often did from the local country town in South Australia, about 20 minutes, 30 minutes away. And they would always bring candies, or lollies, as Australians call them. And they would bring extra for me. They'd sort of put extra in the paper bag. And I have two younger brothers. One is 18 months younger and one is 8 years. So one of them at about 10 was just baby. But my one who's 18 months younger, I always felt protective of him. And so when they would give me more lollies, they go, oh, you know, we've got some special ones for you, but don't tell Paul. And I go, why am I getting special lollies? Why? And I felt I would go and give immediately, divide them back up and give Paul the same as me. So that experience was very, I felt loved. I felt somewhat seen and heard. But by about 14, I started to change my behavior a lot and I became rebellious pretty quickly.
Can't help but think, hearing that story, that those of us doing the seeing and the hearing have a special responsibility to pay attention to how we need to modulate that seeing and hearing. You know, maybe turning it down or changing the flavor as our as the object of our attention demands. Mm-hmm. Or requires.
Yeah. Yeah, so as I continued to evolve as a child, by 14, I saw the behaviors of my father that had created the boundaries as being the opposite, as being restrictive and over-demanding on my mother, over-demanding on my brother, my younger brother. And I was not treated the same. I was treated differently than my brothers. My brothers were treated much more harshly than I. So I don't know why I got into a very strong belief system fairly well around that time of what I believe was fair and unfair. And that, by my definition, you're being unfair in how you're treating my mother and my brother. And you're treating me more fairly. So I started to rebel against that. I would say, don't treat them like that. You don't treat me like that. And it was very volatile because he would never, there was very many times when he wanted to hit me, but he wouldn't dare because he was so volatile in his anger. But I pushed up against the boundaries for the rest of his life. And I did go through therapy and I did do a lot of work because I uncovered a lot of other abuse issues as I got to my late 20s and early 30s. Not by him, verbally by him, but actually there were some other things that happened in the family, which was a big part of me coming to terms with him and coming to love him and appreciate him for what he had brought to me. and that we never got to be on the same page till the end of his life last year. And but I had loved, I had come to resolution with him about the person he had and the great gifts he had given me, because without him, in the way he would be, I wouldn't be who I am today, without doubt.
Wow. Well, that leads me, well, before I go there, thank you for sharing that, and thank you for it seems like you did extraordinary work to take a relationship that so many of us would think of as fraught and try and compartmentalize, Chernobyl, build enough concrete around it so that it can't affect you. And even in a relationship that has so many different complicated vectors, you've found a way to look at the whole thing and see that it is your root, and therein lies love. Wow.
Yeah, beautifully said.
Yeah. And so now I will ask, who are you?
Well, I have two answers to that. I don't know
That's
how deep into the
all.
rabbit hole you want to go, but you're going to get my cosmic answers.
Okay.
So who am I? I do believe I'm an energetic imprint of cosmic consciousness in the form of this flesh and blood and amazing thing called a human body. I am consistently and constantly in awe of how this scientifically, and there has to be some magic, I don't know what else to call it, consciousness, you might call it God. I don't like to limit, the word God has limitations. I'm a God person, but I like God without limits. So I am a creation of some scientific understanding of how I came to be, but I'm much more than that. And it's much like when you walk into a room and you know you've got two bodies in a room or three bodies in a room, but there's an energy present that you can't explain, but you know there's an energy, whether that's excitement, happiness, joy, sadness, rage, anger. Now, where does that come from? There's an energy present. So there's something beyond my understanding of who I am that has me be this conscious person, and that I have a limited lifespan. So do I go on beyond? I don't know. I used to have lots of beliefs about that, but the older I get, the less beliefs I have about what happens after the next life. I just know what I can do now in this life is what I know I can do, and that's what I'm paying attention to, not whether anything's going to happen to me in another form after this body is no longer with me. So that's one answer.
I actually wrote down energetic imprint of cosmic consciousness because, wow. I haven't written down a single thing so far in this interview series as I've done it, but I didn't want to lose that. That's amazing.
Well, you are a man of amazing depth of words and language. So that has me feel seen when you do that, because I know the depth and breadth of your knowledge of words and use of them.
Wow, yeah. Thank you. Well, I don't want to stop you from the second answer you wanted to give, because if the first one is energetic imprint of cosmic consciousness, I can't wait to see what else you've got.
Oh, this one's going to disappoint you. It's not as anywhere near
Oh, who knows?
as fluffy and ooh la la as that one is.
Yeah.
But I do believe that, and I do a lot of. My coach is a very. My coach is a quantum physicist, as a PhD in quantum physics, and is a coach, trained coach. And I love working with her because we go into dimensions with me that are beyond just what we talk about. So if I'm working on expansion, which I'm always working on expansion for myself at this point in my life, and I'll be honest, I'm 50, nearly 59. So, you know, I've got a different perspective now than when I was first started coaching 23 years ago, which was when I was in my mid late 30s or somewhere. And so for me, I'm working on expansion. And so who I am now is someone who does know what I love and what I don't like. And I'm not the person that I have my parents' DNA in me. No, that's part of me forever. And what I had to do over time is figure out what color do I like. Here I'm wearing purple today. What color do I like? My chair is a gaming chair. I'm not a gamer, but it's blue. Now, what do I like independent of my history? What subjects am I interested in? Where do I want to live? I mean, all of that informs who I am, because otherwise I'm only informed about who I am in relation to who I'm not, because I'm not my mother, I'm not my father. But a lot of people are so influenced, as I was, by beliefs about, say, religion, about boundaries, about who you talk to, how you talk to, what you say, what education you get. And to actually untangle that very tangled ball of human web of family, for instance, is our primary way that we get to know who we are and figure out, what do I love? What don't I love? What do I stand for? That to me is quite the process. Coaching can happen. I happened to be personal development 10 years before I ever heard about coaching. So I was on my personal development journey of finding this out way before I ever got to coaching. Well, not as glamorous as my first response is, you know.
Well, glamour aside, you said that, you know, one answer, you know, razzle dazzle, one answer may be disappointing. And yet, what I'm hearing is something different from better or worse, greater or lesser. And I'll share what that is. I'm imagining tango right now. Argentine tango is a dance where one physically listens to one's partner, and that sets it apart from many, many other types of dances. The dance that I surmise in both of your answers is a dance of volition, between the cosmic consciousness that is creating this energetic imprint of which you spoke, and the volition that the I that is Carly can express.
Nice. See, you're a master coach. You just did that so beautifully and succinctly.
Yeah. What does thinking of both of those answers dancing together do for you?
Well, the image that came to mind and the person that came to mind was Eminem.
Uh-huh. Oh, I saw that coming.
I grew up in a very small country town without any exposure to music and that until I actually believed for a long time in my 20s that when I heard a radio song on the radio, that was actually the artist live in the studio. Mm-hmm. I did not know that it was a record. I didn't know what a record was until, I mean, much in my 20s later. And here I live in Southern California. How did I get here from this country town with 2,000 people talking about Eminem? Glad you asked that, Carly. Well, you see, to me, when you mentioned the tango, What I thought of is I could imagine the tango, but what I was attracted to was hip hop. I don't know when, but and then there was all this controversy at some stage with this white guy called Eminem who was claiming to rap and do rapping and all this, what do you call that? They were dueling or whatever. And I just was so fascinated by that, and it was so outside of my reality. And I really tried to understand what was going on. And I have to be honest, one of my favorite albums is 8 Mile, the 8 Mile thing, by Eminem. And I feel like he opened up the opportunity for Japanese, Korean, Russian, European, everybody was now into hip hop. And then what it did was create an identity crisis in some ways for African Americans who'd created that. Now, I could be all wrong on my history here. So this is how I perceive it. So to me, there was this ability to see something beyond. Eminem had a passion for something he saw. He didn't care whether it was within a certain culture. He went, I love that. That's what I want to, that's me. I want to do that. And so I don't know how that relates to me, but it just feels like, you know, it's limiting to think of tangoing. And when I'm con if I'm a cosmic conscious energetic imprint, then I can play in so many fields and I can dance in so many arenas and I can learn to tango, or if I want to, I can learn to rap or to do anything if I want to. And I have limitations by my physicality because I'm not a believer of you can do anything you put your mind to. I used to believe that. That was one of my first trainings in personal development. I don't believe that anymore because there are limitations. I don't believe I could put my mind to being a space, a person who goes to space. At this point in my life, maybe I could have when I was 19 or whatever. But I do believe that we go a bit far with that belief system as well. So the whole thing of tango, cosmic consciousness, I just think that we have so much in us that we don't even try, we don't even explore to see, well, what is my dance that I want to do? I love hip hop, particularly. That's what came to me.
Well, tango doesn't work for you. Let's scrap that and replace it with a hip hop duel between cosmic consciousness and your own volition.
Well, I don't even know whether is what M does hip hop? Is that the genre? I think it's even rapping.
Okay.
Yeah, so what's the point
The back
here?
and forth, the back and forth
Yeah.
is where I'm pointing.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm feeling a little lost right now as to where we're going and
It's kind of fun.
It was fun, but I think that thread, I'm a little like, where is that little thread going? And I don't know that there's any more to say about it right now, unless you've got something you want to ask.
No, but this may be something to come back to, frankly, after this conversation, because I think the way you posited yourself as these, I just saw two sides of a symbiotic consciousness that may be worth exploring, if not now, some other time. But as someone who recognizes this dynamic and highlights it in answer to a question about who you are, it's pretty remarkable. Don't think I've ever had an answer like that before. Let's shift our attention with this in mind to coaching. What is important to you about coaching?
Well, I think the journey for me, coaching is a very selfish journey. because I had already somewhere, who knows? I mean, I am a, what do you call that? Implant into my family. I'm like nobody else. Nobody has traveled outside of Australia in my family, my immediate family. No one's been, you know, no one's in business like I am. I have a business, you know, no one's done what I've done. No one thinks about cosmic consciousness, esoteric life. I think about a lot of different things. I love religions from a study perspective. I don't have to be in one, but, you know, my parents, my mum's still at the stage, very religious. So for me, I don't know where it came from, but in my late 20s, I got on a personal development journey. And I really was back to your original question is I wanted to know who I am. And I felt like there was something wrong with me. I found out there was abuse in my history I didn't know about. And I'm not going to go into the particulars of that. But I'll just say that it took a person in my family's death before I came to understand why I had repressed memories.
Mm-hmm.
And when that person died, I was able to start to, because actually the threat of death was there pretty well every time I interacted with that person as a child. So I was into my own journey. I did therapy. I think everybody can benefit from therapy. I did sitting in groups and individual sessions in my early 30s. Poor second husband, Darren, we were married at the time and we got married. I changed my first name. I didn't know why I was changing my first name from Carol to Carly. I just knew I had to. And then this person died in my family. And then I started getting memories. And it was all to do with dissociating myself from that child of mine, me as a child, to be able to heal, start to even see what was wrong with me. That's how my frame was, what's wrong with me, all through my 20s. I had a great, by the time, I had a fantastic time in my 20s. I was in the advertising industry in Australia. I worked in the media department doing planning campaigns. I was an assistant, a media buyer. I got to go to Grand Prix, to football games, to arts and theatre, everything, because we got all our clients would give you tickets to those things. I got exposed to so many things. I was out there partying. I had the BMW. I had the car. I had a house on the Sydney Harbour. I was making money. I was having a great time. But inside, one day I blacked out. I was conscious, but I didn't know what I was saying. And I had drunk some alcohol. My body was so toxified with drinking and partying and that. And this was about 26. I ended up passing out with my boyfriend at the time, present. I ended up going to a nutritionist who said to me, your liver is so deep, it's old. You are not a 26-year-old. You are really old. And you need to change your habits, otherwise you're going to be dead. I was like, come on, don't be so dramatic. Anyway, that started me a lot on my path. And so by the time I got into my 30s, I was already really close. I was already doing a lot of self-questioning on the personal development journey. I'd done some personal development. And so for me, that was really important to be on that journey. And so I had a business, had a consulting business with my second husband. I have a third husband for 20 years now, as you mentioned, Michael Stratford, who's amazing. But my second husband was an amazing man, a different type of person. And we ended up having a great business, a consulting business, employees together. We did all of that. And then we didn't have any way. We actually created graphic representations of the vision and values of large corporations, companies, so they could communicate to everyone in the organization. And I realized we weren't making an impact. We were doing great work, being paid a lot of money, very in demand, but we didn't have any impact because people would still take those values and visions and stuff, and there wasn't any change that I could see happening in those organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Along came coaching. I heard about coaching through a colleague, a peer, who actually we were at the back of an Anthony Robbins program staffing back in 1997. I'd done those programs and I thought they were very valuable. He said to me, I'm bringing a coaching training program to Australia, and I think you'd be a great coach. And I looked at him and went, I'm not a coach. I'm not a people person. I'm a businesswoman. He looked at me and he said, oh, no, I think you're a people person. Do you want to pause for a moment, or are you fine?
I'm fine. I'm guessing that you're prompting me because of the background noise.
Yeah, I just want to check, because I'm a present to your child may need attention. Do you want to take care of that, or are you fine?
She has lots of attention right now, and I'm keeping all of this noise in here as a feature, not a bug, of the funny times we're in.
Yes. And that's why I wanted to embrace it and not try and pretend it wasn't there. See, that's also present. What's present in our space? Well, your child, your daughter, is it? She just started to make her presence known. So I want to include her.
Yeah. Yeah, no, she has lots of attention behind me, and I'm aware of it. And if that weren't the case, I'd step out, but I trust that everyone there's got this.
Okay, just want to check how you are with that.
You know, this is week 52.
So literally,
do it. Yeah, literally.
Literally, March 13 last year. You're right, and today's March 12. Went into lockdown officially. You're right. Wow.
Yep.
So if you're okay, I'll just continue that part of the story, because it's a long answer, but I think it's a really, if you're asking about who I am as a person and an MCC, these things all have informed me is my personal development journey, getting to the place where I found coaching found me, really. Tony, bless his soul, he's no longer with us, the man who actually introduced me to coaching. I did end up doing the program, and I ended up leaving my half of the business, selling it, and moving on about a year after I did my first coach training program of 150 hours or whatever. But I started out, to me, soon after I had my first coach, 2 years, my first coach, then I've always had a coach on and off cycle. And I feel like that's so important for every master coach, everybody to have their own coach. I don't have one continuously right now. Mm-hmm. We're cycling out of a 3-month period right now, really intense. We're going to have a break, and I'm coming back for the next exciting thing I want to work on, expand on. So to me, what's important about coaching is that it keeps me personally, it keeps me honest in my own desire to be congruent with the way I feel internally. I want to, my values and how I aspire to express those values, and the fact that I'm living those values to the best of my ability, because I'm very aware of my flaws, and I've worked really a lot on my own ability to be kind and caring and understanding about myself, that I'm not a George Clooney. I mentioned him earlier before we got on. You know, George Clooney just seems like the perfect man. There are many women out there that, you know, just seem to have it all together. Oprah Winfrey. Yeah, they have it all together. I just really had to take time to get to know myself. And for me, the fact that I'm coaching and mentoring a lot of coaches keeps me in the game of my own personal development, and keeps me growing and developing so that I continue to be the best person I can be. And in the meantime, the ripple effect is today I'm talking with you, and I've worked with you to support you in your mentoring, as you mentioned earlier. And here we are doing this, which is going to impact a whole bunch of other people in the world in a positive way, I'm guessing.
I'm prepared to go beyond guessing and assert that yes, that will happen. Thank you, listeners, for listening. This is for you. you talked about congruence at the heart of the need to coach, and you also talked about living a great life that wasn't so great. And I've been privileged to just learn from so many people through coaching, through not coaching. But one of the things that I've come to accept is that the lives that look greatest don't feel that great on the inside. Mm-hmm. And any external trappings of success, there's more to the story than we as an observer can see, you know. And whether it's the guy who became the ambassador of his country to Washington, which, wow, you know, I can't think of a bigger accomplishment in that realm. But, you know, poke a little and find out that, well, he never really wanted to be a diplomat, but circumstances sent him on this path, and boom, several decades later, there he is, still trapped by those circumstances, and doing a really good job, but like wondering why. To the people who run successful businesses that they founded in order to meet X, Y, and Z demands, but would rather be off doing something else. And these are just a couple of examples, but I could go on and on and on and on. And, you know, it really makes me wonder what success even means. But I bring this up because you were talking about congruence and, you know, congruence with values. You know, one can distill values and beat oneself and other people over the head with them, but there's something different about a value that resonates quietly and that we can meet on a level.
Yeah.
I asked you what's important about coaching, which is how we got here, but I could shorten the question. What's important, Carly?
Yes, what that's really. And I'm going to give you an answer to that if you'd like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from my perspective, when I hear people say, you know, what's your purpose in life? And I go, and they come up with these ideas of, you know, my purpose is this. And I go, that's a thing, that's a doing. And the simplest answer I have is what I find most important is that the life I live is congruent. The inside and the outside is congruent. Mm-hmm. What I believe, think, feel is congruent with what I actually put out there in the world and to the best of my ability. And I know where I'm not congruent. I know where the, like you mentioned to me earlier, we talked of before we got on here, how we don't always feel, you know, the inside doesn't always match how other people view us on the outside. And the worst thing we can do, the most damaging thing we can do for ourselves is to compare other people's external, what they look like, as you said, to to what we feel like. That's a great recipe for feeling bad. And actually, to me, energy is everything. So anytime our energy is being impacted in a way that isn't free, open, you know, to me, the MCC journey is a path of development to being humble, continuing your journey. You're never done. It's from ACC to PCC to MCC is a different process. Boy, is there a difference between an ACC skill level coach to a PCC to an MCC. They have completely different skill levels, as you now know.
And I'm not assuming that every listener is going to be a coach and know these abbreviations. So maybe you can talk about the different levels of credentialing through the International Coaching Federation and what they represent, especially as an assessor who's worked with so many people.
Yeah, so the ACC is Associate Certified Coach. It's beginner coaching. How do you actually coach and structure coaching? Professional Certified Coach is the middle credential level. It's like mid-level. It's professional. What do you need to do to be professional? And then Master Certified Coach is the highest level, which is how do you take those into the next level of mastery. And there are different skill sets and they have a different credential along the way. And the whole purpose of the ICF, International Coaching Federation, is to create an accredit certification programs, coach training programs, and that meet their requirements for congruence with mm-hmm. their competencies and also individuals like us who are going to then demonstrate those competencies on an individual basis. So there's both coach training and then there's credential of individuals. Do you want to add anything?
Yeah,
to that?
No. That's just good background for anyone who might have been lost in the alphabet soup.
Yes, thank you. So I just want to complete a thought that I had because you sort of what you find important.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be dramatic here. I don't mean to be because it doesn't feel dramatic to me, but it may sound that way. Is I came upon almost death 4 years ago, so I was really close to death. I could feel my life energy going, and it was because I had a misdiagnosed medical condition, and I was being misdiagnosed for about 6 months.
Oh God!
Almost died, really close. And so then I actually did get another doctor. I did get correct diagnosis. I had a surgery that was life saving. I had multiple overnight in the hospital, completely transfused all my blood because it was completely not okay. So I'm super grateful for that. And I'm completely and 100% healthy. And how I view myself is another whole probably topic, but I've always viewed myself as healthy. I just happen to have a medical issue. Oh, I happen to be near death. That happens to be. But it was never that I was unhealthy, even while I was going to a near-death experience.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I say that is because most people who've had that type of experience, or they know people, I know many of my clients, I have people in the Arab world who are my clients, I have people in Russia, Europe, everywhere. I'm thinking in this country, in the US, where I am a citizen, I can think of at least half a dozen of them who have lost or are having devastating things happen because of losses right now of significant people in their life, not only because of COVID, but because of just dying and dramatically dying and quickly. And I'm able to be empathetic toward them as a coach, not as a therapist, but as a coach. So when I had this near-death experience, I was still working. I'm lucky that I was still doing my work. I chose what to do. I had enormous resources of medical and and integrative medicine. And so I had the resources financially to take care of myself on so many levels. Most people who've been through an experience like that, I hear them say, I completely changed my life because I realized what was important to me. And I didn't, no longer did I want to be doing X, Y, and Z. I didn't change a thing and haven't in the last 4 years since that. The year of nearly dying and recovering was very informative. And so what it did inform me was that my life, I did exactly what I'm doing today is what there's nothing I would change about my life. If I died 4 years ago, I'm really happy that I nothing, no regrets, none. Now, my dad died last year. Never got to resolution. But I have to tell you, 4 years ago when I almost died, when he had no compassion for me, never spoke to me. What I did with my coach, who's a very psychological, as I told you, in the world of quantum physics and a lot of stuff, so we come from a different perspective because I've done a lot of therapy. What we did was work with me, and what I did was I owned that I could have a relationship with my father in my imagination. And so what's important to me is that most people don't do this work. As coaches, people who coach often don't have a coach. People who coach at all levels, including MCC, Master Certified Coach, don't continue to do their own work, to continue to absence things that are in the way and presence things to bring in. So for me, I've created and have the most beautiful relationship with my father in my inner world. My 8-year-old, 10-year-old self, Carol, she has an ideal relationship with her parents, and I draw on that every single day. I do believe that most people's pain in the world is because they haven't been able to come to some sort of resolution about their history and be able to transform that into something useful. My near-death experience and the medical condition I had, I could relate directly to my rage at my unfinished business of my own emotional connection to my history of abuse as a child. Even though I'd done lots of work, there was a part I had ignored. So I dove deeply into that from any medical, emotional, spiritual. And while I was having medical treatment, my doctor would say to me, "You keep doing what you're doing. You are doing great. Your attitude, you know, go for it." He encouraged me to do my Bikram yoga as long as I could during the treatment. I'd say, "Well, what if I get, you know, something from someone?" He said, "You're fine. You're good. He knew my mindset and my energy was going to protect me just as much as what he was doing to support me and all the other integrative stuff I was doing. So what's important to me, Gideon, long answer, is that it's all about, to me, wholeness, healing, in order to be able to serve the world better. However that looks to every individual, whether that's one person they're serving, a child, or whether they're doing AI, you mentioned someone, or whatever.
Yeah. The thing I most appreciate about that answer is that the near-death experience as a focusing event is almost a cliche. And you've inverted that cliche by showing how it's optional to wait till a focusing event to heed what's important. You have sought out what's important, and the focal event just showed you that you were pretty much aligned with the path that you needed to be on.
Yeah.
And it makes me want to answer the question I'm going to ask you next before I let you take a swing at it. So the next question I want to answer is how has coaching changed you? And in the last few months, I've been, I guess, reprogramming a lot of my own experiences that I did keep at bay. I used to feel quite chagrined that I spent two times in college on academic probation, that I'd managed basically through willful arrogance to you know, defy structures that were impersonally put in place and land myself in hot water. But recently, for reasons I can't put my finger on, those were the most important experiences of being in higher education for me, you know. Having not met expectations that I didn't agree with and felt consequences for it. I didn't do a good job of fitting into Washington, D.C. and making it work when I first arrived here, and I held a temp position that just felt like a half year of humiliation to me. When I step back, I have more warm contacts from that experience than from the career I briefly landed in for a few years afterwards that I thought was such a reprieve from that. And so all of these these experiences that I did not like and did not like the memory of. Moving to Germany and when I was 9 years old and finding myself with my family suddenly homeless one Sunday night because the person we'd exchanged houses with reneged. I spent years just, you know, frail over that. And I think that's the kind of thing that makes you grow up wanting people to feel at home. You know, it sucked then, but what's not to love about it now?
Yeah, I do hear the pain. Yeah. Something still in your voice as you speak and can see.
There's pain. Yeah. But does that mean that I can't love it even though it hurts? You know?
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, because you see, that's something I deliberately did over a long period of time. And it started in my personal development program in the late 80s that I did, is starting to look at every single story of my life and look and separate out what's the facts of that, what's the story I'm telling about it, and what's the alternative story I can tell about it now, because it's memory, and the memory, I can choose to hold that memory in multiple dimensions and multiple ways. So I've rewritten stories about what it meant to be in my family of origin, what it meant, what it means about me for my life now. And those stories, every story we have in our life is a story that is one we can look at and imagine how else could we tell that same story, because it's a memory. It's not happening now.
Mm-hmm.
So what memory do we want to create around it? And I resisted inner child work forever, because I thought it was like poo-poo, don't want to do that. And eventually I came to, through my, not that my coach did that, but she held the container for me to explore how I wanted to hold my relationship with my father in particular. And eventually I came up with this, and it took me about 6 months to work through a particular, I mean, my inner child when I first started this, which was while I was very sick. She was comatose. She was in my imagination. So I started to form a relationship with my 8 or 10 year old self. I'd never wanted to do that in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And as I started to observe and not try to change anything, just to be with her and see her back to being seen and see her, and it's all imagination. This is all made up, and I'm making all this up. Eventually I noticed a shift in energy. Then I took her to her playground. Then I got my dad and my mum there. And then I got them interacting from a I see you perspective, because to me, that is my wound in my life. I did not really feel seen and heard. And who by? My father.
Mm-hmm.
That's my wound. So I created this gift of the wound being a beautiful experience. So when he actually passed out of this world, still raging at me for things he felt I didn't, you know, whatever, I could be okay with that. I'm okay because I have the ideal. I see him as the beautiful human he was when he was 31. And I think that that's the opportunity we all have, because if we can all come to some resolution about our stories that we have created about our life and what it means, most of them do come from origin stories, then I think we can be a better service to everybody we encounter. And I happen to be in the vehicle called Coach doing that.
Mm. So something's falling into place. Maybe this will happen every 10 episodes. But I am beginning to wonder if we as seers and hearers of our clients see and hear as a bridge, as the means to the end of hopefully our clients taking the initiative to see and hear their own struggles with compassion.
Yeah, truly. Because a lot of the people I work with who are very senior coaches already in the mentoring work I do, and I want to work more with conscious humans out there in the world again, like I'm expanding into a different coaching reality as well. But in my mentoring reality, I already work with, I work with a lot of people I never knew, but I have a special affinity for people in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I really appreciate about being Australian and the upbringing I have, it just as the DNA of an Australian, which is, I think, different than maybe an American DNA, is Australians have always been really good as a culture at being able to separate out politics from people. So I know when I was living in Australia, we could always go, oh, that president of the United States, that person I don't really like, but oh my God, I love Americans. Mm-hmm. And you'll hear any American that has ever gone to Australia without question say, I was embraced. Oh my gosh, I was loved. They loved me. So Australians can separate out politics from people. I can go and I can work with people in the Middle East, in Russia. My husband does with China. And we can work with people because, and he's American, but we can work with people as coaches and hold them as being humans because they are humans and they live in political systems, but they are not their politics. And when we become political and we can't actually separate out humanity from political agendas, then we are not able to really be of service. So I was able to be with and witness one of my Muslim clients in the Middle East earlier this week, who is incredibly capable as a change agent in that part of the world, and got to a deeper truth of her own pain. And how they, and I hear this very often in the Middle East, by the way, there's a recognition by a lot of the senior coaches there that what they need to do is get psychological training so that they can be actually, first of all, supporting. There's a lot of bringing out the collective pain. Mm-hmm. That is there because of abuse, of history of wars, all of that. And so we doing our own work, me doing my work, own work, I believe my presence speaks louder than words. All of the stuff I've told you today, Gideon, you didn't pretty well know much of that. But all of that is why I have 88 people so far that have passed MCC and why I have full MCC mentoring programs. It's not just that I'm good at explaining and doing this, you know, what is MCC and helping them there. It's because I do my own work all the time and I can then support them to be more transformational. And just, it's not about getting to a place alone. Yes, it's great to get a credential. It's great. I love it. And it's just a checkpoint along the way. So coaching has just completely been the vehicle for me to continue to shape myself and others who come into contact with me.
With such a clear-eyed view of what it represents to do what you do, both for yourself and for others, where could this go? Where could a growing tribe of people who exhibit coach mastery as you see it effect in our global community?
Well, as you know, last year I participated in anti-racism program that was as a student, and I became aware of my white-skinned privilege as a and that really was shocking how much I didn't know about myself.
Can I say something before you go down that path? Because you've talked about doing the work to demonstrate who you are. And I think the thing that prompted you to do that was listening to a conversation I had where I spoke to one of the instructors, someone that I had helped train as a coach, and asked where I had perpetrated racism against him. With the promise that I would not defend or explain a damn thing. And I think that it was listening to that conversation that brought you in. So there's like real power in doing our own work and doing it publicly.
Yes, thank you. That was incredibly brave of you as a white. Do you call yourself white? White man or what?
It's a good question. The people who murdered my ancestors wouldn't think of me as white, so it's kind of an interesting question. On American forms, people like to count me as white. I have questions, but yeah.
Yeah, so that was incredibly brave of you, and it was very informative as to what Akasha said.
Yeah.
And what you were asking, I thought was courageous. And I was already on that path because it was in the social consciousness around, yeah. You know, George Floyd being murdered. I was already reading books and that. But what, and in fact, another colleague of yours, in fact, I think, was Elise, was instrumental in actually me getting into the program. So all of you, see, to me, that's collectively, we were all doing our work. And I show up and I go, I'm ready. I want to be a student. And it was shocking to me as to what I learned about myself, uncomfortable. So as a result, I'm now because I'm opened myself up and have realized my own privilege and how that is. And I want more people of color to be master certified coaches. I've supported a few African Americans, supported many people from other countries and some of the countries that don't have many MCCs. I'm very grateful that I'm part of getting, I love to get more in Scandinavian countries. Now I'm attracting people out of Africa who are want to become MCC coaches. And I think that's part of it is for us to be able to be open to, and then how can I support them? I'm open to that as well. So yeah, that's what I want to say is it can go in many places, but I think we need to be open to changing ourselves. And many MCC coaches of the past or people who think that who've had their certification for 10 years have no idea what MCC is now because we've moved with the times, we've moved with neuroscience, we've moved with our understanding of human development. I mean, one of the people we both admire, I think you learned from is Jennifer Garvey-Berger, adult development theory. There's so much we know now, and there's also this thing you started out talking about, I think, spaciousness somewhere, and maybe you didn't say it on, maybe just before we started. Spaciousness is a really undervalued core skill in life, and it is a core skill of a master coach, is to be spacious and not have to put yourself in a hierarchical position of knowing stuff. And you have to know your coaching skills. You have to know yourself, and you have to shut up a lot of the time. And that is so when we can be quiet and spacious and allow people to be heard, different from therapy, because therapy is about getting some resolution about history, can be very coach-like, but there's a different focus. Coaching is really about seeing the whole human, and we all have emotions, thoughts, feelings. That's normal. And so can we, the more that we see, seeing you started with that beautiful question around seeing how were you, who first saw you, my job now is to, I continue to see myself. It's a daily practice I have to do because sometimes I get an email and I go, oh, good time to say not nice things about myself there. I judge myself or whatever. So I do my own kindness work. How can I see myself? I don't need other people to see me. That's where I go. I don't need other people to see me. I see myself so well. I happen to live with a human, Michael, who sees me incredibly well. And that's a gift. And I don't think I'd be the human, or maybe I wouldn't even be alive today without his gift of seeing, because it's a big gift he gives. But we need to be available to see other people in other cultures, in other people of color. All, everybody is the same. We just have different expressions because we have more racism at the surface, which I think is a good thing, than we've ever had before. We've got more of the things that have been under the surface. And the more you can bring the stuff to the surface, the more you can do something with it. It can be messy for a long time. But, oh, my God, we have such opportunities as coaches to support people through, and we have to do our own work to be able to support other people, to be able to do the great work they want to do in the world.
Wow.
You didn't know I was going to say all this, did you, Gideon?
No, I did. Of course not.
thank you for the gift. That's good.
Yeah. Well, I hope that as you listen to this conversation, you recognize that there's, no joy in comparing yourself to Carly or anybody else. And really just see opportunities to wade through all of the uncomfortableness that life throws your way without the hope that it will be resolved. Maybe the uncomfortableness can lead to the type of congruence that Carly was telling us about. If you listened to this conversation and started thinking about memories that rankle you, feel free to drop me a line at Gideon@kstreetcoaching.com. I'd love to hear what you light on, and let me know what memory you want to create instead. That would be a gift. Carly, I'd like to invite you to make requests of everybody who was kind enough to listen to us and spend this time with us today.
That was a beautiful one, Gideon. That was really good. Well, mine is a pretty basic one. Is to me, one of the greatest gifts we can give another human being is to seek to understand the fundamental thing of how they like to pronounce their name. So if Gideon had said to me that you said to me your name is said Gideon, I am going to do my utmost to pronounce your name. Now, you may not know this, but pretty well everyone that I, if people come to, everyone has to have a chemistry meeting with me to work with me. I need to know we have connection because that's number one. I need to know. I'm going to give you a lot. I need to know if we're good together here. The first thing I'll ask is, how do you pronounce your name? So whether it's spelled S-A-R-A-H, I go, is it, how do you pronounce your name? They go, Sarah. And another, the same person may say Sarah. Another person, whatever. I am going to write it down and I am going to, make my best opportunity. That simple act is so important because that's the fundamental starting point for me of being seen and appreciated and respected. So, for example, my husband's name is Michael. If somebody all of a sudden changes it to Mike, I feel he's being disrespected. His name is Michael. If he wants to be called Mike, he will be called Mike. He will call himself. So I think that fundamentally, what can you do to really pay attention to how people express themselves? Number one is how they say their name. And then how can you just be open and present to everybody in your life and see them as doing their best? What do you need to change in yourself to be able to see every human being as doing their best? What do you need to shift in you to be able to see yourself as doing your best?
Yeah. Well, it's a lot to chew on. And if you've enjoyed chewing on this with us, let us know. Also, if you can think of other people who need to chew on just this conversation, please send it to them. It will be a gift. It will be a gift for them to hear this. And know that this Master Coach Collection is a rich gallery of conversations with master certified coaches, between master certified coaches, and you will find a lot of nourishment. So know that, you know, we don't close. Unlike other galleries that have been closed for the last year, this one doesn't close, and we're open at all hours. So tune in and let a conversation really light you up and make you feel at home. Thank you for Carly.
I just say then, based on that, I would invite the same thing. If anyone wants to contact me and ask me anything or share anything, you can go to my website, carlyanderson.com, and there's a contact. So carlyanderson.com/contact and email me. I'm really open to hearing what you have want to say as well, and support.
Yeah. What a great way to prime, conversations that are congruent with your value of expansion.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And thank you for listening. Thank you. You've been listening to the Master Coach Collection. When you subscribe to this podcast, you can lose yourself in hours of rich conversation and share today's episode with someone who will absolutely love it.